So just coming into the hall right now as you were sitting, I could just really feel a sense of settling. I don't know if you've noticed that or if you've felt that too. But I could felt, you know, quite moved by the feeling of settling and the connection I feel in the silence. So thank you. We're going to dive into our exploration of the attitudinal foundations this morning. I thought I'd start with one of my first personal favorites, non-judging. A lot of experience here. So just to say that the attitudinal foundations, they're qualities that we can turn to and cultivate, and they're really part of any mindfulness training. They're helpful, if not essential, in cultivating present moment awareness. There's seven of them, and they're not separate or independent. Actually, they're interdependent. So in letting go, it helps to have trust. Non-striving is supported by patience. Beginner's mind can bring balance to the judgmental mind. And to me, it seems ironic that we can't make them happen. I can't make myself be patient, despite my mother's wishes. Be patient! Can you make yourself be patient? What happens when you try and force it? How does that feel if it's not there and you're forcing it? What does that feel like? What do you tell yourself when you can't do what you're trying to do? I can't be patient, now I'm a failure. So the foundations sometimes aren't about doing something or being something. It's more like recognizing what's arising, starting there. What's here now? This is impatience. This is striving. Recognizing when it's here, this is letting go. This is allowing. So this recognition, this function of recognition is really important. Much of the time we might not be aware of striving or judging or holding on. Once you recognize that it's here, what happens next? There might be a loosening, a space, a shift. And we can incline the mind, we can incline the body and the heart in that direction. So as we bring the idea of attitudinal foundations into our practice on retreat, I like to think of it as a dance between the actions of recognizing and non-doing. But there might be some doing later on in the talk, but let's just start there. So we'll be exploring the conditions that encourage, cultivate, the conditions out of which the attitudinal foundations can arise. I also find it interesting that some of them are named by what they're not. So like non-judging, non-striving, which lands in me as very conceptual. It's very up here. So if we want to move from the conceptual into the experiential, we have to explore the territory, or what are the qualities of the judging mind? What are the qualities of non-judging? And in some translations, the word mindfulness really means to become familiar with. It doesn't mean changing our experience. It doesn't mean fixing it. It means really getting to know it. getting to know the judgmental mind. And just I'm curious to see for yourself, how does that, the term, how does non-judgmental, how does that land in you? I know there was a time for me, I was thinking that is like too warm and fuzzy, right? I am about getting the job done, and sometimes judgments have to happen. But we're not talking about a non-judgmental attitude that's a warm and fuzzy sentiment. It actually allows us to look at ourselves and our world in a different way. And even break out of habit patterns that aren't helpful to us. So is judging something you do? Or maybe it's more something you notice. Have you ever tried to stop having judgmental thoughts? I'm so judgmental. Stop judging. Does that work? Can you force yourself to not have judgmental thoughts? I mean, I even notice judgment during metta. On retreat, walking around, giving metta to people, may you be happy. May you be healthy. May you walk a little quieter. It just comes in. So the mind is constantly generating thoughts. It's like a lamp lets out light, the mind lets out thoughts. It's a thought generator. And even saying that word generator, where I live in the East, in New Jersey, I live in this area that's a mountain, they call it a mountain. It's not really a mountain, but it's woods, and we lose power a lot. So everybody has a generator. And the generators generate power, they also generate a lot of sound. And I like to think of my mind, it's like a generator, it generates thoughts. It just, that's what comes out of it, that's the energy of this organ of the mind. So sometimes maybe it's more like judging is happening. So just a question to explore. Is it something you do or something you notice? Or maybe a little bit of both? And of course, this cultivating a non-judgmental attitude requires us to become very familiar with this constant stream of judgments. Have to be aware of how we're constantly reacting to the inner and the outer experiences. Just for the heck of it, I looked up the synonyms for judging. And here were some of them that I found. Evaluate, rate, value, criticize, condemn. So what I liked about that is that it's like a continuum of intensity. And it gave me a new kind of flavor to be curious about my own judging. How intense is it? How strong is it? Of course, we could put a totally different spin on it altogether. The mind is just a problem solver, right? It's in charge of performance improvement. And we know, right, these are the genes that we inherited. Our nervous systems are designed to identify threat in the environment. It's protective. Although the software, we might say, is outdated. So our minds sometimes don't tell the difference between the danger of a nearby car accident or running late to an appointment. We're lit up in the same way. We're triggered in the same way. In some of the Eastern cultures, the mind is seen as a sixth sense organ. So the mind is to thought what the ear is to sound. So when we take a closer look at this, there's a stimulus that involves some contact, right? So maybe it's we see the weather outside, see that. Or maybe we're in the dining hall and we're tasting dessert, maybe a chocolate chip cookie. Or maybe having the thought, oh, I'm not really good at this. So this contact with the sense organ, it generates a feeling tone. And if it's unpleasant, I don't really like the weather, it's too cold. Is it gonna rain all week? Really? My feet are already wet. I didn't bring warm enough clothes. If it's unpleasant, what follows is a feeling of aversion. I wanna get away from this. How am I gonna change it? And that might even dictate our behavior. Now going the other way, right? If we're eating that dessert and it's tasting really good, contact, sense organ, and then there's immediate and automatic moving towards, I want more of this. I want this pleasant feeling to continue. So this is often happening without our awareness. Contact, feeling tone, moving towards, pushing away. So what's so beautiful about retreat is we're slowing down, we can actually see the links in the chain and how our sense experience triggers thought and how thought can trigger behavior. And when a thought appears in the mind, we often run with it, right? We exaggerate it. We easily get obsessed with some thoughts. And when we're not on autopilot, we don't question it. We just do whatever the thought tells us to do. The judging mind can be so compelling, right? Have you had that feeling where you just knew something to be true, and then of course you found out it wasn't true at all? Or you thought you had to have it, it would be the best. And, you know, it was all right, but it wasn't the best. So I actually have a judging mind story that involves Jon Kabat-Zinn. I was doing the program that he used to do at Omega, the 7 or whatever day it was at Omega, a number of years ago. And it's not silent, and Omega is more like summer camp. It's not it's just like summer camp, okay? You're outside, it's fun, there's good food, you talk, you run around. And there's a little 3-day segment in his program where they ask you to be silent. So you're silent amongst non-silent people. You wear a little sign in silence. If you haven't done it, it's an interesting experience. So one of my habit patterns is I like to bike ride. I road bike and I take my bike on retreat. And different teachers have different opinions about this. So during the 3-day where you're silent, they didn't say you could ride your bike. They said go for a walk. And like they didn't tell me I couldn't ride my bike. I'm gonna ride my bike. So of course I'm coming out of my cabin and here comes John walking up the walk and gives me this look. Immediately I knew he was thinking, where are you going on that bicycle? What is it and where are you going? You're supposed to be practicing in silence. So my mind just took off in that moment. And I had a great ride. It was beautiful weather and it's a nice area. But my mind was totally caught in this judging Jon Kabat-Zinn. I mean, really, who does he think he is to tell me I can't ride my bicycle? I mean, it just went on and on and on. And then I went to the other side, judging myself. You shouldn't have done this. You're gonna be thrown out of the MBSR camp. You're just gonna be thrown out. And, you know, I have some practice, so there was a little bit of distance, but the spinning of the momentum of the thinking, I couldn't stop it. It just kept going. And it was just very, very compelling. So I came back from my ride, and you know, we finished the week. And after the week, I had the opportunity to talk with him a little bit. And, you know, so I asked him, I mean, what do you think about bike riding on retreat? And he said, well, yeah, you know, I saw you with your bicycle, and I was thinking, that's a nice bike. So we both had a laugh over that, because of course I told him what I just told you. And in that moment, it's like, poof, you can see how your mind creates such a fantasy about things. But it feels so real, and it dictates our behavior. So knowing this truth, right, that the mind has a mind of its own, this can be helpful to us. So this factor of recognition, or this faculty of recognition, judging is happening. Or maybe noticing in this moment there's no judging happening. There's this other piece of what do we need to keep the judging going? The judging mind is like a fire, it needs fuel. How do we fuel the judging mind? We fuel it just by rehashing every mistake we ever made. I was rehearsing how I was gonna be chastised for riding my bike. So this is how we fuel that judging mind. The wind wants to come in. So we can jump right in there, rehash, rehearse, review, regret, and all of this amplifies the story. So just experimenting now in your opportunity with retreat practice. Inquiry into judging mind. Beginning with recognizing judging is happening. And then broadening that out. So you're leaning in, you're taking a closer look. Oh, I want to get to know this judging mind. What's the story that you're telling yourself? So it might be something like, I'm having the thought that. How does it feel in the body to be judging? What are the sensations of judging? What's the quality of the judgmental mind state? So does the mind feel more contracted or does it feel more open? Does it feel clear or does it feel more cloudy? So we invite the judging mind to tea and get to know it, because it's already here. Recognizing, allowing, and then inquiring into. So the practice isn't to stop it or end it or judge it. It's the possibility of relating to it in a totally different way. It's impersonal. We can even be playful with it. Sharon Salzberg, you may have heard this story. She tells a story about her judging mind. And do you remember, some people are old enough to remember Charlie Brown, right? Remember the character of Lucy? Remember Lucy? The problem with you is you. That's Lucy. And so when she sees her judging mind, she says, hi, Lucy. There you are again. So we also have the inquiry into the absence of judging. What does that feel like? What is that even like? I mean, it might be like the don't know mind that Tim referred to last night. Don't know mind. Don't know. Perhaps a beginner's mind, the qualities of beginner's mind. What are the qualities of beginner's mind? Open, curious, receptive, engaged, and how does it feel in the body? How does curiosity feel in the body? Is it more tight or is it more spacious? So seeing for yourself in your moments of on the cushion, in the chair, in the walking, the qualities of a non-judgmental mind, of the don't-know mind, a beginner's mind. Seeing with fresh eyes. I was on retreat not that long ago. So, you know, in the East we have Insight Meditation Center. So I was up there at the Forest Refuge. And I spent a lot of time outside. And one day I just looked up and I realized the sky is blue. I mean, it was so blue. It was so amazingly blue. It was as if I had seen the sky for the first time. And I just kept staring at this blue sky, you know, with the sense that we could live in a place where the sky is not blue, like Iceland. You know, they have some blue skies. But you, I mean, do you get the feel of that? That just this discovery of the beauty that's around us, but when we're in our narrow focus of doing, we miss out on that. Right? And there's so much of that here now, and surrounded by the nature, the setting that we're in. So bringing this beginner's mind to everything that we're doing. This quote I like, I think, expresses beginner's mind, or don't know mind, more like. The barn burned down. Then I could see the moon. So seeing as if for the first time. Seeing the weather is too cold, I don't really like it. Where does not liking take you? And what else is there? So here's the point where there's maybe some effort, but Alan Marlatt has a quote. He does the relapse prevention program, substance abuse, or he did. Again, you might know of him because I think he was at UW here. But it goes something like this. Mindfulness isn't just about paying attention. It's recognizing when we're suffering and making steps to ease our suffering. So we recognize judgmental mind. We allow it to be here. We're interested in it. And then there's this moment where maybe we see that something else is possible. Well, what about beginner's mind? How can I orient what's possible for me here in terms of orienting to don't know mind, beginner's mind? So in the middle of all that rain this morning, I mean, did you see those trees dancing with the wind, right? These trees over here, these really big tall trees. It's amazing the way they're kind of perfectly orchestrated. So we can use this, what Tim was talking about, right effort, to orient, to incline towards what else is true, what else is here. In a way that it's not forcing, it's not running away from a difficult moment, a judgmental moment, and seeing what's here. It's just inclining towards what else is true. So it's said that we never step in the same river twice. No two breaths are ever the same. No two bites are exactly the same. No two body scans are exactly the same. So this invitation, how present can we be to our experience? What happens when we suspend liking and disliking? Not end, but suspend. Suspend the liking and disliking and go below the words to see what we can learn or what we can discover. And seeing too, what's the reward or result of having strong preferences? Going to share a reading from this is the third Zen patriarch about preferences. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set apart infinitely. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set apart infinitely. So giving attention to when we have preferences, the liking and not liking. How does it feel in the body? Does it trigger a long train of thought about how things could be improved or better or what you're going to do next time? I keep a running list myself of what I want to remember on retreat, right? Next time you come here, bring warmer clothes. That way I can put it on the list and I don't have to keep reminding myself. Can we enjoy the food that's provided for us and just be happy we don't have to shop for it or cook it? Or maybe you're having a challenging sit. It's just how it is. So noticing how judgments, this tendency for preferences, how it causes suffering, and how it might show up for you on retreat. Maybe you want a different schedule, or a warm meal, or more guiding, or less guiding. A different seat in the room. How easy it is for the mind to want what we don't have and to not want what we do have. And there's just this potential, right, for letting go of preference, which is non-forced. It's different than forcing. It's seeing the suffering of preference. And there's no need to judge the judging mind. I had a tendency kind of early on to get caught up in that, you know, thinking that I'm more judgmental than everybody else. And then I became a meditation teacher, and really we're all judging all the time. Just how we're relating to it and whether or not we own it. So the practice is to let the mind do what it does and observe with curiosity and engage these faculties of recognition, allowing, inquiry, and then maybe right effort and inclining towards what might be more wise, making a wise choice, if that's available. And sometimes, like the day I was riding my bike, it just wasn't available. I mean, there was too much momentum in there. So the best I could do is create some space around it. And we might even see the judging mind as a teacher. As a teacher. There's a part in Zen Mind's Beginner Mind, and this was my interpretation of it. Suzuki Roshi is talking about horses, four kinds of horses, good horses, bad horses. And when I read this, I heard it as my judging mind. The horses are like my judging mind. See how it lands for you. In our scriptures, it is said that there are four kinds of horses: excellent ones, good ones, poor ones, and bad ones. The best horse will run slow and fast, right and left, at the driver's will, before it sees the shadow of the whip. The second best will run as well as the first one does, just before the whip reaches its skin. The third one will run when it feels pain on its body. The fourth will run after the pain penetrates to the marrow of its bones. You can imagine how difficult it is for the fourth one to learn how to run. When we hear this story, almost all of us wants to be the best horse. If it's impossible to be the best one, we want to be the second best. This, I think, the usual understanding of the story and of Zen. You may think that when you sit, you will find out whether you are one of the best horses or one of the worst ones. However, there's a misunderstanding. If you think the aim of practice is to train you to become one of the best horses, you will have a big problem. This is not the right understanding. If you practice in the way, it does not matter whether you are the best horse or the worst one. When you are determined to practice with the great mind, you will find the worst horse is the most valuable one. In your very imperfections, you will find the basis for your firm, way-seeking mind. Those who can sit perfectly, physically, usually take more time to obtain the true way. But those who find great difficulties in practicing will find more meaning in it. So I think that sometimes the best horse may be the worst one, and the worst horse can be the best one.